There's the part I'm missing. I'm not actually applying this. I can't just read about it and tell my friends about it. That doesn't make it stick. I have to actually do this work that I'm telling them to do, and put yourself in a room where people are going to challenge you. Because when you see them doing that work, you're like, well, wait a minute. I don't want to be the guy that's read the books and I'm not doing anything with it. I've got to step up to their standards.
You're listening to the Ultramarathon Mindset Podcast, and this is Trail Talk, where we have casual conversations with all kinds of runners. I'm your host, Eric Dieter. Whenever trail runners get together to run a few miles, we never know where our conversations might go. So there aren't too many topics that are off limits for us. So if you're ready, let's get started. So, hey, welcome. This is the Ultramarathon Mindset Trail Talk. We are live on Facebook. And if you're hearing this on the podcast, I don't say this often enough for the people who listen on podcasts, but this is recorded from a Facebook Live. So you're going to hear some things that may not necessarily apply to most podcasts, because I don't edit out those things that we say because of Facebook. So this is what we call Trail Talk. It is a virtual trail run between myself, Eric Dieter, and a virtual trail run with my guest. And today my guest is James Dunn. And we were hooked up by a mutual friend. I'm always looking for people who have an interesting story, something that would be interesting for my audience here on Facebook and on the podcast. And you were recommended by my friend Dallas, James. And so welcome to the show.
Well, hey, thank you for having me. Yeah, Dallas is an awesome guy. And so I'm thankful that he connected us.
Yes, yes. Now, and one of the things that when you and I had talked before, we both had kind of have had some life transformation mindset work done, and we connected in those things as well as running. But most of the time we spent talking about some of where we had been, some of our limiting beliefs, things that we'd been through with life. And now you've got quite a story of transformations about where your life has been. So as if we were going out to on the trail and running, how do you introduce yourself to people who you have just met? If you were going to spend a few hours running with them, tell us about yourself we had this conversation earlier, but for those who are listening,
just try and kind of fill them in.
Yeah.
It's always, a challenge to try and drop it into a tiny little nutshell. But, if I'm giving you the elevator pitch, I'm James Dunn and I'm a divorce coach for dads. I myself have been divorced twice. And, as you talked about, personal development, that's something that we're both very into and have studied a lot. And I had been studying personal development, being a part of it for probably 15 years when I found myself getting divorced for the second time. And so when that happened, I had to really stop and question, like, well, wait a minute, you've been studying personal development. You're this guy that reads all the books and you're the positive motivational guy that all your friends go to for advice. So how the hell are you getting divorced for the second time? And that's when I had a really big, massive transformation, as you talked about, with personal development, because I figured out that I was reading it and studying it and telling everybody else how great it was, but I was never applying it to myself.
Mm-hmm.
And then I had to really do a big deep dive and really stop and think about it, because when you get divorced the first time, it's easy to point the finger to your ex-wife and say, well, it's all her fault. If she had done this, if she'd done that, if she just listened to me, this would have been a perfect marriage. If all she'd done was everything I asked her to do all the time. I mean, come on.
Yeah. But of course, every husband expects their wife to do, to do everything.
Exactly. Yeah. I don't know why it didn't work out. Well, when the second one didn't want to do that either, then I had to stop and do the math. Like, wait a minute, there's two divorces here. You're the common denominator in both of these. You are the one that needs to change, being myself.
Mm-hmm.
So again, even though I had been studying and listening to it and reading it and all this in personal development, I had to go do something, a much, much deeper deep dive into it. And that's when, I shared my story of going to my very first Tony Robbins event. that was, you know, going to San Jose, California back in 2014, going to my first live event, 5,000 people were there, and just seeing those people and connecting with those people, you know, one-on-one, you know, as we're talking about having like a trail talk, that's what I finally realized. It was that connection with the people that was missing in that transformation for me. You know, it's one thing to read things and hear them. You read books by people like Elon Musk, and he talks about his story, you know, and you're like, oh, wow, that's cool. And that's really inspiring, but that's Elon Musk, you know, or you hear stories about whoever else, and it's really easy just to push it off. Like, well, they had this special life. It was perfect. It was whatever. But when you get into a room or you have a conversation like this with somebody one-on-one, and then you start hearing their stories of their limiting beliefs and the things they've gone through, and then you can see how they've overcome those. And you're like, oh, wait a minute. I don't have any excuses anymore, because if they've gone through this and they've made it through, then how can I keep telling myself that I can't get through this, you know, or hold myself back? Mm-hmm. So that was a big part of the transformation for me, was going out someplace where I actually connected with people one-on-one and live, and heard their stories and saw myself in their stories.
You know, what you were talking about, all the reading, all the books, it's really easy, I think, to be, what we call a self-improvement junkie. Mm-hmm. And because there's a lot of books out there, and, you know, I did this a similar thing. I didn't go to Tony Robbins live event, but I read, you know, inspirational books, motivational books, you know, self-improvement books. I mean, I listened to videos and tapes and, you know, but for some reason you can absorb all of that and still it doesn't get down into your, you know, soul. And
it's one of those things where it's what I have learned over the years is that we're just distracting ourselves, and we can distract ourselves with television. We can do it with movies. We can distract ourselves with drugs, sex, whatever. And personal development can be a distraction, mm-hmm. because you're just using it as something to pass the time and distract you. But as like I said, it took me over 15 years to figure out that's what I was doing. I thought I was doing the work by reading the books and talking to, you know, telling my friends how to live their life. But it wasn't until I actually got around people who were really doing the work, because I was almost like the quote unquote expert, because I was the only one reading the books. So I was giving everybody advice. Mm-hmm. But when I got around people who actually were also reading the books and had taken that stuff and applied it, then I'm like, oh crap. There's the part I'm missing. I'm not actually applying this. I can't just read about it and tell my friends about it. That doesn't make it stick. I have to actually do this work that I'm telling them to do, and put yourself in a room where people are going to challenge you. Because when you see them doing that work, you're like, well, wait a minute. I don't want to be the guy that's read the books and I'm not doing anything with it. I've got to step up to their standards. You know, and that can be a slippery slope when you want to get in that whole comparison game. But it is good to put yourself in a room with people who are going to push you and challenge you to where you want to go.
So you went through all of that, and you say you're a divorce coach. So what would you say a divorce coach is all about? You said a divorce coach for men. So
specifically for divorced dads, because I've got two kids. I had a child, you know, in my first marriage, and then I had another child in my second marriage. And that was something that I swore I would never, ever do. After having the split family after the first marriage, I swore, I was like, I'm never, ever going to do that to another child. Because I just always felt really bad for my son that, like, you know, me and his mom couldn't figure out our issues, so that way he could be raised in a loving, caring home. Mm-hmm. And so I swore, I was like, I'm never doing that again. Well, then I went and I did the exact same thing again. You know, I got into another relationship, wonderful woman. We just realized after 6 years of marriage that it wasn't for us. I mean, we weren't meant to be husband and wife anymore. So there I ended up taking another child and, you know, putting them through that whole divorce and having to be raised in, you know, two separate parents and two separate homes. And then when I went into that deep dive we talked about, I learned so many things that would have helped me, you know, in that situation, and maybe not get divorced, but if nothing else, I can now take that information and help these guys who are going through divorce and say, hey, listen, you don't have to wait years and years and years to get through this. I can help you get through this much faster, because let me show you what I've learned. Because I know, just as a man, self-improvement and sharing your feelings and your emotions and talking to people, that's not something most guys do. We're the oddballs here because, mm-hmm. you know, we're willing to do that. But the vast majority of the male population hears this whole idea of, you know, talking to some other guy and maybe even crying on their shoulder. And they're like, ooh, I'm not doing that. That's gay, man. And we grew up in an era, you know, now people are more free to be whoever they want to be and share their emotions and do that. But in the era that we grew up in, that was not something that was ever openly done. I mean, people would, you know, come up and beat you up or punch you, you know, like, oh, you're gonna stop crying, you baby. You know, and like they'll punch you.
Yeah. Suck it up. Stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, let's suck it up. Just get over it. And so I realized that was an area that I could really help people because I've always been that kind of guy that wanted to help people learn and grow. But that was a very specific niche that I could truly have that one-on-one connection with and help them. And I run a group I call the Divorced Dads Hangout Group. We get together once a week, you know, and do like a live Zoom call just to let guys come in and share what they're going through in a very safe environment. And one of the guys literally just this week, you know, made the comment that he said, you know what, I can talk to my lawyer, I can talk to my mediator, I can talk to my family, and I can talk to my friends, and that's all great, you know, and they give me wonderful advice, but you guys know exactly what it's like to go through this. And that's what it's about. It's being able to literally say, I've been in your shoes, let me help you, you mm-hmm. know? Mm-hmm.
The guest that I was talking to last week, we had a similar discussion about how we as men tend to talk about surface issues, mm-hmm. and even as runners. I mean, like the people that I run with, there's not very many things that we pooping in the woods, you know, health issues, injuries. Yeah. I mean, like there's men and women together, there's just this, we're very transparent about the stuff that's going on,
yeah.
but we tend not to talk about those deeper issues. I mean, that's still on the surface. It's still around something that we're all involved in.
Yeah.
It seems that there's this level of openness, but to really, you know, if there's something really going on, that's a little bit more of a barrier.
Yeah. Well, I mean, people, you know, they may vent a little bit of frustration, but they won't really get to the core of what's bothering them and what's hurting them. You know, it's more of, for lack of a better term, people want to, you know, just complain, you know, it's a bitch fest. It's like, oh, I just want to complain and moan and gripe. I just want to get this off my chest, but it's not really getting to the heart of, you know, it really hurt me what this person did. They don't want to expose themselves in that way. It's more of, I'm just going to scream and yell, but it's not, this person hurt me. And, you know, I talked about that Tony Robbins event. It was a 4-day event, the very first one I went to, and they pushed you. I don't say they pushed you, but they, if you're going to be there, you're going to play full out. I mean, so they expected you to literally tell people your deepest, darkest secrets. Like, what's the most painful memory you have, you know, emotionally, and share that with people and talk about why it hurts you and why you, you know, is this something that you still carry with you, these emotions and these pains, and then talk through that and then ask yourself, well, why, you know, if this situation happened to me 20 years ago, why am I still reliving that over and over and over, day after day after day? It's like, what do I need to do to let that go and move on and move forward? Because the reality is, this is something that happened to you, but it doesn't define you. It's not who you are. It's literally just an event that happened in your life, but we choose to relive it over and over and over again. So yeah, it's not until we really get open and honest and raw with people and allow ourselves to possibly be hurt or, you know, upset by these people that we can truly, you know, come to grips with these issues and let them go.
Yes. Yeah. And that's one of the things that we were talking about, life transformation. What a book that really kind of got me, like, turned my life around. Actually, you know, I was going through all the self-improvement stuff, but there was a book that really kind of did it for me, was called How to Break the Habit of Being Yourself.
Yeah.
And so it was talking about the fact that when living in the past and rehashing that, and I used to experience this. Yeah. I'd have memories from the past of the things that I'd failed at and the things that, and for some reason, the painful memories were the ones that came back the most frequently. And it was never, you know, this happy day that I had, you know, way back in my past, those things never popped up unbidden. Yeah. You know, it was always, you know, I'd be going along happy as a clam. If clams are happy, you know, I was just going along happy as a clam. And some memory would trigger from my past, and I would go through the same emotions that I had when I experienced it the first time. Yeah. And my body would respond the same way. And that's what this book, How to Break the Habit of Being Yourself, talks about. And, but it also gave some tools about how to start to manage that.
Yeah.
And so for me, that was the start it's really what brought me into running, but it was a transformation that is I was able to start losing weight. I was able to start getting past some of these limiting beliefs that made me able then after I'd gone through some of that to start running, and then brought some of that same thing into my running. So anyway, with this, wanted to start out talking about your personal transformation because you're also a runner.
Yeah.
And so tell me a little bit about your, about where these two things intersect, your personal transformation and your time as a runner.
Yeah. So, my running started, well, my personal development and all of that, you know, introduction to that was probably around the year 2000. It was 1999. Never mind. I know exactly what it was. 1999 is when I really started, maybe 98 even, started getting into it a little bit. But then it was probably another 10 years before I got into running. You know, I shared the story with you before, but I'll share it for the audience. It was literally my second wife and I. We went over to her best friend's house, and her best friend's husband had his little man cave, you know. And so I go in there, and he and I are hanging out for the first time, and we're watching a football game or something. And I look up on the wall, and he's got all his pictures of his sports heroes and things like that, you know, like typical man cave would have. And he had this medal in this case. I'm like, a medal? I'm like, well, what's that for? And he's like, oh, I ran a 5K. And I hadn't run anything since high school, which was many, 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 many moons ago. Idea what a 5K was. So I'm like, oh, hey, how far is a 5K? And he's like, 3.1 miles. I'm like, you ran 3.1 miles for fun? Are you stupid? It was just like the dumbest thing in the world to me. I couldn't even fathom running 3.1 miles for fun at that point. I'm like, that is just the dumbest thing ever. You go, man, whatever. That, more power to you. Nope, I'll pass. But it was one of those things where, you know, time goes on. A few days later, I'm still sitting here thinking about that stupid medal. Is that ego thing, you know, talking about, you know, the comparison games. Like, well, he's got a medal. Well, I want a medal. I want to be cool like him. I want to have a medal like that. So I signed up for a 5K. I'm like, well, if you get medals of 5Ks, I'm going to go get me a medal. And started running. And honestly, the first time I took off running, I literally couldn't run two blocks. I'm like, okay, got to take a walk break. Got to take a break. But found a training program and, you know, built myself up. Got to my 3.1 mile, you know, where I was able to do that. Ran the race. Come to find out, you don't get medals at all 5Ks. This one was just a special thing that he happened to luck out and get a medal. I'm like, well, what is this crap? I got a Frisbee and a t-shirt? No, I don't.
You wanted a medal, right?
Frisbee and a t-shirt? And it's an ugly t-shirt. I don't even want this thing. But I just had it stuck in my head. By that point, I already had it just embedded in my head. I'm getting a medal some way, somewhere, somehow. So did a little more research and found out that primarily the places you get medals are at half marathons and full marathons. And I'm just one of those guys. If I'm going to go, I'm going to go big. I'm like, I'm not doing no stupid half marathon. That just, again, maybe it was the ego thing, but I'm thinking, I can't say I get a half marathon. No, I ran a full marathon. Mm-hmm. So signed up, did all my training, ran it, got my medal. But it was one of those things that actually was a big part of my life transition as well, because going through that process of, you know, how I talked about in the very beginning, I couldn't even run two blocks without getting completely winded. But then your audience is probably familiar with Hal Higdon. I found one of his training programs that, you know, broke it down from just beginning to 5K. And then from the 5K to doing a full marathon. And so it was like that weekly progression of, okay, today you run for 3 miles and then tomorrow you run for four. Then the next day you run for three. And then on Saturday you run for five, you know, and then 3:5, 3, you know, and 3:6, you know, through whatever. So it was that progression. And that was something that really helped me learn the long game, you know, with how to, you know, work on goals and, achieve things that at one time I thought were just ridiculous. Like I said, I thought running 3.1 miles was stupid, and here I'm going to go run 26.2. Yeah, no, this all out the window. But once you see it broken down into these tiny little steps, it's like, wow, that's actually not, it's not that bad. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
So, running once you have run like a 5K, you've already done the 3 miles. And so, doing another 3 miles and as a training run, I mean, those series of small steps and gradual increases is, I mean, that's kind of the key to any transformation. I mean, the small habits build up to big changes.
And, we don't think that though. We just look at the 3.1 miles when we haven't run, or we think the 26.2 miles when we've only run three, or just whatever it is. Like, I want to go make 100,000, or I want to make $1 million. And those all may seem like crazy goals, but when you stop and break it down to, well, how do I make $1? Mm-hmm. Okay. Figure out how to make $1. Just do that 100,000 times. Well, that seems even pretty big, but let's do it, let's do it 5 times. Okay. Well, let's do it 10 times. Let's do it 20. And then you figure out, okay, how to make $5, how to make $10. And you just repeat that over, and all these big massive goals really aren't that massive once you break them down into tiny little steps.
Yeah. Well, and there's one of the books, self-improvement books that I read was one called The Kaizen Way, which is Kaizen's a Japanese term for gradual. Well, and Tony Robbins talked about it too. He has it. He made it as an American phrase, constant, never ending improvement is what he talks about. But yeah, it's of always doing a little bit more and just starting small and continuing to progress in small steps.
Yeah.
And so I read the book, but I didn't do it.
Why not work?
And so I guess you talked about, so what was the thing that kind of you were able to make that change of like, well, yeah, let's do this gradual step-by-step thing versus what you were doing before. What helped you change that?
So for me, again, like I said, it was having a goal that motivated me. And as silly and as stupid it is, it's, you know, that stupid piece of metal.
It was a metal, yeah.
Yeah. And I don't have that one, but I've got one I keep here on my desk that my daughter and I got from a little bounce house.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Like it's called the bounce run or something like that, but it's like, it was a 3 point. No, it was like a 1 or 2 mile run, but it was like every 10th of a mile, quarter of a mile, there was like a bounce house, kind of like a bounce house obstacle.
Oh, okay.
And so she and I went and ran that, you know, but it was this stupid little piece of metal. I mean, obviously it wasn't for my daughter on that one, but you know, that very first stupid piece of metal is like, I just want this cool thing that I can show people, like, haha, look what I did, you know? And that's really what it boiled down to. It was making the goal something that I could really emotionally connect to. It's like, I just wanted to have something on my wall. So when people came over and they saw it, like, oh, wow. And I fed off of that for a very long time where it was, oh, the 5K, you don't get it as much because that's pretty common. People even walk those. So you say you did a 5K, people are like, okay, cool. But when you say you ran a marathon, like, that you get that, what are you, stupid? Oh my God. What?
Yeah.
And so of course, your ego's like, haha, look what I did. And sadly, that's what motivated me at the time. It was just simply, I want that thing. I've always been very big about doing things. I don't know if you know who Jesse Itzler is, but he's got a really cool thing that he does. It's called Build Your Life Resume. And so he talks about building experiences. So he's extremely financially successful, has all that taken care of, but he stops and does the math. He's like, you know, that's cool. It's wonderful. It's awesome. I get all this money. But really what I want to do is look back at my life when it's all said and done and think about all these amazing experiences that I have. And so I've always kind of had a little bit of that in the back of my head where like I've gone skydiving and all these other things, you know, where I like these experiences. And so that even too was part of it. I could look back on my life and say, well, I ran a marathon, you know, so just finding things like that. yeah, it was just the ego, and it was making sure that that goal was something that got me excited enough that even though I hated getting up at 5 o'clock in the morning and going out in the cold, snowy winter, you know, and going for that run, it's like, I don't care, man. I'm getting that stupid medal. I'm getting that medal.
Well, and it's, you know, from what you said, the medal is the representation of the experience.
Yeah.
And so that, but there is something about that actual tangible, you know, piece of steel. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, like I say, just remind, like every time I keep this on my desk, you know, because like I say, it's a reminder. I'm a huge, you know, I love my daughter. She's my number one priority in life. And when I look at this, like I say, it reminds me of that day that we got to go out there and run together. And it was the first race that she and I've ever run together. And the only race so far, if you want to call it a race, run, but it was just, like I say, it's that reminder of something that she and I did together, and the medals for the marathons. I mean, like, you got some behind you back there. It's like mm-hmm. each one of those, you can look at that. And just for that moment, it flashes you back to that accomplishment. It's like, man, there was part of me, you know, I can share, like, you know, when I was running my marathon, the very first one, I mean, you know, your audience is going to know, when you run like a full marathon, you don't run the full marathon, you know, in training, you run 20 mm-hmm. miles, and pretty much you stop, you taper down for the last couple of weeks. Well, I'd run that 20 mile run thinking, I got this, man. It's going to be easy, piece of cake, man. We're going to rock it. Well, I had been training on flat trails with no other people around me, just me and the bunny rabbits and the deer, you know, 6 o'clock in the morning. So it was perfect conditions. Well, when I went to run the race, I'm over in St. Louis, which if anybody's familiar with St. Louis, it's all hill everywhere. And there were, I think, 12,000 people at the starting line of this race. I'd never run anything that big before. So literally by mile 7, I'd already hit the wall. I'm like, what the hell is this? I'm in trouble. And like, how am I going to do 20 more miles?
So you were keeping up with people who were probably running faster than what you should have run.
Well, yeah, it's like you're stuck in that crowd. You can't really get your own pace. So you're kind of doing what they're doing, and you're just, you know, and again, like saying the hills. So I was so out of whack that by, like, say mile 7, mile 8, I'm like, holy crap, I'm in trouble. But just had to keep going and keep going and keep going. And I even got to the point where it was like somewhere around mile 20, 21. I was in my mind running past an aid station, but I'm guessing I probably was walking, because an aid worker walked up to me as I was trying to run past and like, hey, are you okay? And I'm like, yeah, I'm good. And they're like, you sure you don't want to come sit down? I'm like, no, because if I sit down, I won't get back up. And I was like, nope, I'm getting that medal. And that's what it was the driving force. I'm getting that medal. And she's like, well, here, at least take these salt packets, you know, because she could just mm-hmm. look at me and see that I was not in good shape. But again, I knew I was not leaving without that medal. And that's what pushed me.
Yeah. So what was there anything besides that? I mean, when you were out there, you know, like at the aid station, knew you were in trouble. What were the kinds of things you told yourself? I mean, was there anything besides the medal, or was it just
to
have the medal?
You obviously go through, I could quit. I could give up right now. This is dumb. This is stupid. You're watching people literally puking, you know, 20 feet away from you on the side of the road. Thankfully, I didn't see anybody poop their pants, you know, which is notorious for some of those long races like that. Mm-hmm. There was nothing like that, but just, you can see how, in one sense, it's really, really stupid to be doing this and pushing yourself through it. But it was just one of those where by that point in my progression in life, I was like, no, if I set this goal, I'm going to do it. So the medal was, like, say, the tangible physical thing that I could hold on to remind me that I did it. But it was just saying to myself, like, no, man, you're not giving up. Because I also knew that once I did that, then that opens that door completely to, okay, you pushed yourself to make it through this marathon. What else can you do in life? Mm-hmm. And I've used that to do other things. You know, I talked about the Tony Robbins event. You do a firewalk, you know, when you go to that event.
Yes. I was thinking about that when you said you were at a Tony Robbins live event. I was going to ask if you got to walk on fire.
Yeah. Yep. I've done the firewalk four times now. So, and it's one of those things, like, and once you do that, you're like, dude, you've jumped out of airplanes. You've run a marathon. You've done a firewalk. Every time you do something like that, it just builds that confidence in you. And it doesn't necessarily mean you're not going to be scared, because seriously, every single time I do the firewalk, I'm still kind of like, okay, I made it three times without burning my feet off. Is this going to be the one? You know, so I mean, you're still up there thinking these scary thoughts and, you know, wondering how it's going to turn out. But then you can go back and say, but you did it before, man. You know, you had these thoughts before and you made it. You pushed yourself through it. And I think I've had to, I remember explaining this to my daughter not too long ago, because she loves roller coasters. She is like a roller coaster junkie. She's a girl after my own heart, man. I love it. But this year, like, we've been going out to Six Flags for a while, and she would ride everything except for Batman and Mr. Freeze. Because for a while she wasn't tall enough to get onto them, but this year she was. But she just kept getting a little too like, we would get up there, like, we'd get in line, we'd literally stand for an hour and 10 minutes, get up to where you're at the point to get on the ride. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm not ready, Dad. I'm like, okay, well, okay, that's fine. You know, and I told her ahead, I was like, I'm here for you. If you want to get on, awesome. If you don't, I'm not going to be upset whatsoever. So we did this like two or three times, and I finally walked her through the process to where she got to the point of getting ready to do it. And then one of the things I share with her is, like, there's a difference between being scared and pushing yourself to do something that's stupid and being scared and pushing yourself to do something that you know you're going to have fun with. And so showing her, like, watch, I mean, you know, let's literally watch the people that are riding the ride, you know, that you want to get on that you're scared of right now. And again, I respect it. If you're not ready for it, I'm not ever going to push you to do this, but let's just watch these people, you know? So we'd watch the people that were literally on the exact car that we were going to be on. Mm-hmm. And they go around, they're like, woo, yeah, you know, and they come back and like, oh my God, it's awesome. And she's like, dang it, you know? Mm-hmm. And so it's learning to distinguish, walking yourself through those steps and realizing, okay, what's the worst case scenario? And what's the chances of that worst case scenario happening? Because, like, when you go skydiving, of course there's a chance your chute's not going to open. But the reality is, it's like a 0.1% chance that if you jump out of that plane, it's not going to open. And if it does not open, you've got a backup chute. And the chances of that not opening too are so extremely small. For me, the risk reward, I'm like, I'm cool with it. Let's try it. Let's go for it. Let's do it. And like I said, it worked out for her, because then she got on that ride. And now it's literally one of her favorite rides.
Uh-huh. So when you were out there, you kind of had that same push of saying, like, I don't want to be, and I've heard this from other people who they have been in that situation and quit. Mm-hmm. And then as soon as they get, you know, back to the race or the next day or whatever, they realize, oh my goodness, I wasn't as bad off as what I felt like.
Well, yeah. And that's the thing, is like, you train for months, I mean, 3 to 4 months generally to run, you know, a race like that. So all that time that you've gone out there and you've seen yourself, like I said, you've got to the 20 miles, most likely, I guarantee you, I shouldn't say guarantee, but I was almost guaranteed you've run, like, if we're talking about the marathon, you've run the 20 miler, you know, so, you know, all you've got to do is get 6 more miles. Right. You know, you've physically done this before, and I won't pretend that I didn't walk part of that 26 miles that day. You know, mm-hmm. I got to where I hit the wall. I was like, okay, I can't keep running, but I'm going to walk for a minute, and then I'll try and run. Like I said, in my mind, I was running, but I was probably walking fast.
Yeah. You know. Well, you can make the motion. I mean, when you're in that place, I mean, I can. When you're in that place where you're out of gas, you've hit the wall. You can be making the motion of running, but you're still going slower than most walkers.
It's moving, but it's one step in front of the other. Man,
you look like you're running, but you're not really moving very fast. I mean, you know, we've all been there. Well, and in your mind, I'm like, I'm running.
Yeah. Nobody said you had to finish the race fast. As long as you beat the time cutoff, you still finished it. You're still good.
Yeah. My first experience with that was I did a marathon when I was younger. And I realized it was at that point, it was like somewhere after 20 miles. I don't even know where it was. Mm-hmm. And I was doing the thing like you were talking about, the running motion.
Yeah.
And there was somebody up ahead who was walking. And I was like, and normally if I was running with a group, if someone's ahead of you and walking and you're running, you overtake them fairly soon.
Yeah.
It was 5 minutes later and I was not any closer to that person walking. And I was like, this is
like I said, in your head,
In my head, yes, I'm running. In my head, I'm
running. You're Usain Bolt. You're like, I'm Usain Bolt, man. I'm cruising. Yeah. Why is that guy still ahead of me and he's only walking? This is not right. Yeah.
And it was at that point, I was like, okay, I'm just going to walk. I was just like, I totally just, you know, I just give up. And just, I just want to cross the finish line. And so, but I did run across the finish line. You know, once I got there, I did run the last 50 yards or so.
And then, I mean, there's no shame in walking part of it. If that's what it takes to get you there, it's finishing the marathon, you know, because especially when you talk to people who aren't runners, who haven't done races, anything like that, you know, like, hey, did you win? I'm like, Do you understand these races? No, I didn't win. Yeah. You know, like, did you place? Like, no. There's like maybe a dozen or two, you know, people that might have a chance of winning. The rest of us are there just to get the medal. We're just there to finish, to say that we did it, maybe get a PR, you know, but we're not there to win the race. That's not happening for us. You know, I remember one of the races, one of the marathons I ran, you know, it kind of went out and did one of those where you kind of come back and part of it, you know, matched up. And I remember being not even halfway through and seeing the leader literally coming back. I'm like, what the hell?
Yeah.
How are you? And he's like, choo, choo, choo. I'm like, oh my God.
Yes. Those elite runners, when you see them run, like, yes. Oh. Even when I was young, I was not.
I was not that guy. No, I definitely was not ever that guy.
Yeah. And I run with a guy who often will place in the, you know, in the lead. Nice. I think he's set. I can't remember if he set a course record for the 100-mile race here in Kansas. I know there's a 50K course that is very technical. I mean, they call it flat rock, but there's just one section where there's a rocky flat spot and the rest of it is full of these, I mean, like these little round rocks, and there's dirt between the rocks, but you have to dance to get between them and very easy to, I mean, he must have just kind of floated on top of the rocks because the time he put in for a 50K on that course was, it's a course record. And I ran the course, not the 50K, but I mean, run on that course. And I looked at what his time was, and I was like, I have no idea.
But how is that even possible?
And on level ground, he's just very, very fast. Now he's in other races. I mean, he has a competition other places, but for my running group, I mean, it's like, he's always the fastest runner.
He's that guy that could just take off and leave any of you guys whenever he decides to.
Yeah. And has endurance to, you know, we did a sunrise to sunset. We call it the Shaustus. It's the winter solstice. Well, they do it a summer solstice, but this was the winter solstice. It was a quarter mile loop trail. Okay. And so we run from sunrise to sunset and see how many loops you can do. I think he did 197 of these loops in,
that is insane.
In 9.5 hours. I mean, it was like 50 miles that he put in. And
how do you not get bored out of your mind going in a quarter mile loop that many times?
Yeah, that's the challenge, is to the mindset to keep going. I mean, it helps. I mean, we had a bunch of other people out there too, so you see your friends, and I mean, there's a big party at the aid station going on, and you can stop and drink beer and, you know, do whatever. But there was also a competition. I mean, there was a prize for the male and female for the most number of loops.
That's awesome.
So it's a mindset challenge to just to be able to get to settle in and just keep going.
Well, and that's the thing is, with like, I've, you know, you guys have done these ultra marathons, and that's one of those where, you know, we talked about the ego and keeping up with other people, that comparison mode. And that's where I got to after I did a couple of marathons, was I was like, yeah, I'm cool. I'm getting that, you know, hey, everybody thinks you're nuts kind of thing. But then as you get more and more into that group, then you start hearing about, oh, well, there's 50Ks and there's 100K or 100 milers. I'm like, well, crap, where does it stop? You know, and I'm like, you know, I think I'm good. I think I'm good at the marathons.
So you were fine with just doing the marathon?
Yeah, I've got a buddy who has signed up for 50K next year. And it's in the back of my head that I keep thinking maybe, maybe not, because I actually turned 50 next year and I had a big plan that I've decided not to do next year. So maybe that could be my big thing for 50. But I definitely haven't signed up yet.
Well, look at the what the medal looks like. I mean, for a lot of a lot of my friends who are ultra marathon runners, I've heard this from a lot of ultra marathon runners. Well, you know, it's not really my favorite course or the time you know, there's always something in the race that's like, well, you know, I don't really like that, but oh, look at the buckle that you get if you do that course. And so that it's amazing how just that, the look of the buckle, and so there's the mental challenge or the physical challenge, but yeah, you know, look at, oh, that's a cool buckle.
And, well, it's the silliest little things, you know, because once you get into running, you talked about the mindset. It's one of those things you start to understand that it becomes more mindset than it's physical. You know, once you get past a certain number of miles, it really is, you know, whether I run 5 miles or if I run 100 miles, at some point, it really just becomes more of the mind than it does the body, because your body's going to do what you get it to do. And like you said, you know, with me, initially it was that ego thing. I wanted to have that medal. You know, I want to be able to tell people, hey, I ran a marathon. And even with, you know, the 50K thing that I'm thinking about doing, it's this silly concept that, okay, I'm going to turn 50. It's a 50K. It's the step up from the marathon. It's just these little bitty things in my head that seem like, yeah, that makes sense for me. Other people are like 50K. Heck no. You know, that sounds dumb.
And it's the running group that I'm with. I mean, we have there are people who run 100 milers and there's like enjoy doing it. Yeah. And then there's another group is like, you know, they said, I don't have any desire to ever run that far.
Yeah.
And so their sweet spot is 50K or, you know, sometimes marathon. And, you know, they just love running trails.
Yeah.
And we're all runners. And I tell people, find the distance that makes you happy and do that.
Yeah.
And, you know, for me, that it was the longer, you know, I'm not a fast runner, so I try to go for distance and try to have that consistency and a slow, steady pace over a long period of time.
And I'm similar. I'm not the fastest runner. I mean, I've got a decent pace, but I'm definitely not gonna, like I said, I'm not gonna, you know, beat Usain Bolt anytime soon, anything like that. There's no competition there, but I can definitely be the guy, like I said, that I'm going to keep running for 3, 4, 5 hours, however long it's going to take, you know, for the marathon, I got in like the 4.5 hour range, but you know, the 50K, I know, again, that's just mental more than anything. So that would be like, say, the kinds of things for me, it's like, I just want to be that guy that can go out there and do something that these other people think is completely nuts. Cause I'm just going to keep pushing myself to keep going and going and going. And, you know, we talk about motivation. One of the things that used to motivate me, like when you're out doing your training runs, you got to have that mental toughness, like what's going to get me through it. And over the years, it would be, I got that glass of chocolate milk. Or I got that Gatorade 2 sitting at the house. And that's going to taste so good when you get home. Just keep going, man. 3 more miles. That's all you got. Just that chocolate milk is going to taste so good.
Yeah.
You know, it's the silliest little things, but whatever motivates you to keep going, you just have to find that little carrot that's going to get you to move.
Yes. Yes. And to some of it, I mean, and I think, you know, I don't know that you actually said this, but you make a promise to yourself in setting, you know, you talked about setting a goal.
Yeah.
It's when you set a goal, it's kind of like making a commitment, making a promise to yourself that you're going to follow through.
Yeah.
And so that, you know, what you were talking about in your marathon, that was kind of at play there too, probably, is that like, well, wait a minute, I set this goal. And so how am I going to feel if I, you know, how am I going to feel about myself if I quit and let myself down?
Yeah.
You know, going back to the life transformation things, it's the same kind of thing. The reason I failed so many times was because I would set goals and I wasn't committed to following through. And so I spent a lot of time reading the books, you know, knowing all the stuff that I was supposed to do, and then, you know, saying, well, I should do this, and then I didn't.
Yeah.
And so part of when I started getting some traction was like, oh, I need to start like actually believing and honoring what I, you know, the promises that I make to myself, and you know, being that person that, you know, that I wouldn't break my promise if I made a promise to someone else, that I wouldn't let them down, but yeah. I was letting myself down, and of, you know, actually being, you know, well, they just keeping yourself, keeping your promises to yourself.
Yeah. Well, and it, and again, it's, and it's also making sure that the goals that you're setting are your goals, not somebody else's goals, not society's goals that say you have to have a certain level of income, or you have to have a certain car or a certain type of house or whatever that happens to be. We get too caught up as society, again, with that comparison game, feeling like I have to do this because this person did it. And maybe that's the right thing for you. Maybe it's not. Maybe it's something you truly want, but don't do it just because somebody else has it and you want to be like them. Like say with the metal, yeah, that was there. But if I didn't also, you know, if I hadn't found myself in a situation where I was wanting to be a little healthier because I'd had, let's see, by that point, my daughter would have been 3 or 4 years old and I was trying to get a little healthier, you know, because I wanted to be there for the long hauls. Like, you know, my mm-hmm. daughter, you know, I want to be around, you know, for her when she gets married and when she has all these life things, you know, going on. I don't want to be the dad that's, my dad died when I was 50, no, when I was 27, he was 54. And I think at that time I was already in my 40s. I'm like, if that happens to me, you know, if I die when I'm 54, she's only going to be in her teens. She's not even going to be 20 yet. Mm-hmm. So I want to be around for these things. So I was already starting to look for things that were going to help me be healthier, and move me in that direction. So yeah, I say it was the metal, but I already wanted to find something that was going to make me healthier. So that was the combination of the two. Here's my ego thing. I want that metal, but it's also going to help me get healthier. So tie these two together and then boom, off we go.
Yeah. So bringing that into your coaching, how do you communicate all this with to somebody? If say someone was, you know, like where you were at 15 years ago.
Yeah.
When someone is, you know, says, hey, you know, I feel like I'm stuck.
Yeah.
And you know, my, whatever it is, you know, people will say it in a lot of different ways. They say, I'm stuck. What is kind of your, you know, how would you, if someone was listening to this and saying, you know, I feel stuck, what can I do? What would be advice you would give for?
Well, I think if they're feeling stuck, I mean, my best advice to them is just figure out first and foremost what truly makes you happy. You know, what is going to make you happy in life? And again, figure out, are you chasing a life that other people expect you to have? Are you doing things that you think society's told you need to do, your parents need you to do or want you to do or whatever? Because if we're stuck, usually it's because we're not doing something we're passionate about. We're not doing something we're excited about. Because if you're doing something you're excited about, it's hard to get stuck for long. Mm-hmm. You know, you find a way to make it happen. But when we get stuck, it's because we're getting bored and we don't have that motivation. We don't have that excitement to get up and find a way to fix it. Because like say, trust me, if I needed to come up with $1,000 to go take a trip, you know, to do whatever, let's just say somebody said, hey, you can take a trip around the world. You know, I got to just come up with $1,000. I'm going to find a way to get that $1,000 because I might take a trip around the entire world and visit every single place I want to go to, you know, goofy example. But if that's all it takes is $1,000, I'm going to find a way to get it because that's mm-hmm. something that would excite the hell out of me is to go travel the entire world, you know, and visit all these great places, whatever. But if that's not something that motivates me, I'm like, well, I'll try for a little bit and then I'm going to quit. So really look at what it is that you're aiming for and what your motivation is. You know, we've talked about this a few times, but really just look at that because I think that's probably where you're getting stuck is the goal you're chasing or whatever you think you're going after is not exciting enough for you to really find the way. Cause you'll always find the way. Mm-hmm. It's old cliche. It's like where there's a will, there's a way, but just find something that just seriously lights you up and then start chasing that. Cause that will help you get unstuck in my mind.
Yeah. It kind of reminds me of a conversation that I had with my wife, and it was an issue that I had to deal with that helped me get unstuck is to really kind of answer the question of what do you want?
Yeah.
And finally, you know, I just, of going through and the reason that I think I always spent so much time circling around and spinning my wheels is because I wasn't honest with myself to be able to say, here's what I really want. Mm-hmm. And I was, it was, I, there were things I thought I wanted. Oh, I'll go after this thing.
Yeah.
And I'd get, you know, sometimes you get partway down the road or I'd be working for it. It was like, oh, I really don't want that. This other thing, that's what I want. And then yeah. I would,
oh. Well, but you were kind of going after what maybe you thought you could get, you know, versus what you truly wanted, or it was like, say, what other people might have expected you to go after, but it wasn't what you truly wanted. And so that's like, say, where you find yourself stuck is like, well, it's not exactly what I want, so I'm not really going to push for it.
Well, or I didn't feel like I deserved it, or didn't feel yeah. like, I mean, there's a lot of subconscious things that happen in our life. The way we were raised and the way I was raised was, you know, don't be too big. Don't be, you know, yeah. don't, you know, keep yourself kind of in the middle. You know, you don't want to reach too far. You know, you yeah. don't want to be a failure, but you don't want to have this big, huge life. And in my dreams, I wanted this big, huge life. You know, I wanted to be the hero of the story. And, you know, mm-hmm. yeah, we all have a tendency to want that, but there was also this part of me was like, no, that's not the person you're supposed to be. You're supposed to be this person who's, you know, much more humble, much more reserved, and don't get too, you know, don't get too invested. Play it safe.
And, yeah. Well, again, that goes to that's society's expectation. That's your parents' expectation. That's all these things people taught you what you should expect in life. And, you know, we get to decide what we want in life. We get to choose that. Nobody else.
Yeah.
You know, somebody else didn't make it, that was their own limiting beliefs that held them back.
Yeah. And I was, we tend to adopt the beliefs of our family, you know, when we were younger. And those were the things that had come with me for, you know, for all of my life. And so it took me a long time of, you know, processing to really dig down and say, really this, and to be able to say to myself, this is what I want. I want this. And then, you know, just to even say it out loud and really, really admit it, because I didn't believe that was the kind of life that was, you know, available for me, because, you know, it was like, I wasn't supposed to be that person, because everybody else in my life had told me, you're supposed to be like this. And it was like, if you're like, what I thought I wanted, what I really wanted, it's like, well, that's, you know, that may be expecting too much. And,
yeah. Well, and the thing is they do it from a place of love. That's the thing that we kind of forget sometimes. They're doing it from a place of love. They want to protect us. They don't want us to get hurt. They don't want to see us, you know, try something and fail and then, you know, whatever. So they, you know, they kind of try and hold us back to keep us safe, but again, that's where it's their own limiting beliefs that are holding us, you know, that are trying to hold us back, is because they, as much as they love us and as much as they believe in us, they can't see us getting there maybe. And so that's where we just have to say, you know what? I love you. I appreciate you looking out for me, but this is what I'm going to go do. And even if I fail, even if I screw this up and I lose all my money or I destroy this relationship or whatever, I feel this is the path I need to take. And I'm willing to take that risk and I'll learn from it. I'm going to grow from it no matter what happens. I will come out better on the other side, but I've got to at least go down this path, because I can't live with that regret of playing it safe and not going down there and looking back at the end of my life going, well, I wish I'd tried that, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and I had that the night before I ran my 100-mile trail race that I was just getting ready. I'd never run. I mean, I'd run a 50-mile the year before, mm-hmm. I trained and I was like, okay, I want to do the 100 mile distance. I mean, I knew people who'd done it. It was like, okay, I can do this. And so I trained for it and everything. The night before I was getting ready to run, my wife says, why do you have to do this? And it was like, I hadn't asked myself that. It was one of those things, you know, I'd set the goal, you know, it was something I wanted to do, but I hadn't really dug in as like, ask myself, why do I want to do this? It was like, oh, you know, I'd run 50 miles. I know all of my friends, they run hundreds. This will be a fun race. But her question, you know, really, so I was like, it stumped me. And I just had to sit there for a few minutes and I don't. And so finally, after thinking about it for about 5 minutes or so, what really hit me is like, wow, it was a revelation to me as well, was I need to find out if I have what it takes to go the distance. Awesome. And I might fail. Mm-hmm. You know, I might not be able to make it, but I said, this is a big challenge and I want to find out if I have what it takes to do it. And, I would have gotten a buckle. Mm-hmm. I didn't run fast enough. I missed the cutoff. So okay. I failed in my attempt to the, but my running friends convinced me to do a different 100-mile trail race about six weeks later. And I did finish that one on time. So I got the 100-mile distance in, and I was supposed to go back for redemption this year. And they postponed it. So I have to wait for the one that I missed.
Yeah.
Going back next year.
That's awesome.
But I said, I want to do this.
Yeah.
But I hadn't dug deep to find out why, but for everybody's motivation is different. And
yeah,
I think at some level, you know, all of us have, you know, we want to see what we're made of. We want to see what, and from what you said, your running experience has kind of been that there was a little bit of that in there as well. It's like,
I want
the medal, but it's single.
But again, it's the medal is, you know, what does that medal represent? It represents that I pushed myself and did something that a teeny tiny percentage of the population has done, you know? So like, you know, like say what I've done, well, now you've done the 50Ks and you've done the 100-milers. And so I'm like, I'm over here. You're like, oh my gosh, you know, you're even a smaller percentage of, you know, the country. But like I say, is that enough to motivate me? Maybe the 50, the 100, probably not, you know, but again, it's whatever, you know, floats your boat. I feel, you know, and that's where everybody has to learn and understand is stop worrying about what Eric does. Stop worrying about what James does, you know, figure out what works for you and what excites you and don't go chasing goals because other people are doing them. To try and keep up with them, do it because it excites you. And if other people think they're stupid, which I guarantee, I know I've been told that. I guarantee you've been told that, you know, some of these things that we do are just stupid. Who cares if they think it's stupid? Well, more power to you, man. I don't care. I am excited by this and I'm going to go do this. So chase whatever dream you got and don't let anybody tell you, you know, otherwise.
Yeah. And you know, run the distance, run whatever distance that, you know, whatever challenge, you know, whatever challenges you and whatever makes you happy. I mean, that's, I know people who they've said 5K is fine with me.
Yeah.
And quite frankly, you know, there is the same kind of mental discipline that goes into running a 5K as running a, you know, running a marathon or a, you know, 50 mile or it's different. It's shorter.
Yeah.
But you still have, I mean, there still comes that point. And, you know, I ran my first, it was an informal 5K, but for Thanksgiving, our neighbors put it on. And, you know, there comes that time about 2/3 of the way through the race where you know, you're running faster because you've got a shorter, shorter distance.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's always a point in that race where it's like, oh my goodness, this is hard. And, and you have to push through that. And so 5K, it only takes a few minutes. It's only a few minutes, but it still takes the mental mindset is the same for any distance, you know, and the mindset for training is the same too.
Yeah.
So, you know, I always tell people, I says, you know, my page, then this show is called the Ultramarathon Mindset, but, you know, that doesn't mean you run an ultramarathon. I mean, that's kind of mindset you need for pushing through any kind of goal.
Yeah. I mean, no matter what the distance is, you still have to train yourself to get up every single day or you're not every single day, but like get up and go do those training runs every time you have those scheduled. So there's always still, I mean, that first mile always sucks. Doesn't matter if you're running 5 miles or you're running 100 miles. That first one's like, oh, you know, but it's not until you get going, then it really starts to settle in. So no matter who you are, it's waking yourself up at, you know, I got in the habit where I was doing my runs at like 5 o'clock in the morning because that was the only time I had, because I could only do the shorter runs. You know, when I was training for the marathon, it was I have to be at work, you know, like at work at 7 or 8, 9 o'clock, whatever, and kids get up and all this crazy stuff. So I'd have to get up at like 5 o'clock in the morning to go do a lot of those, you know, runs. But yeah, still, you know, getting that mental discipline to drag yourself out. It's like, who, and I've shared this on social media many times, you know, in a lot of my posts, is like, literally nobody's going to know the difference if I get up and run or not. It's me. I'm the only person that's going to know this, but I'm going to do it because, like we talked about before, it's like, I've made that commitment to myself. I want to do this and I'm getting my butt out of bed. So it's learning to develop that mindset of, I made that commitment to myself. I'm getting up, I'm going running. I don't care if it's raining. Yes, that sucks. Yes, it's going to be wet. It's going to be cold. It's snow, whatever. But I'm going out there, I'm doing it because today's a run day. You get out there and you do it.
Yeah. Well, I always try to keep these to about an hour. So we're right at an hour. So if somebody wants to connect with you, like I said, you're a coach for divorced dads. But if someone wants to connect with you, how is the best way for them to look you up?
Best way to find me is you can find me on Facebook and Instagram at The Real James Dunn, or my website, therealjamesdunn.com. Those are the easiest places to connect with me. I spend about equal amount of time on Facebook and Instagram. So social media is always quickest, easiest. The only challenge is if you're going to send me a message, it's usually best if you follow me or friend me first, because some of these social media platforms, if you don't follow or friend people, it will go into this weird, funky inbox that nobody ever sees. And I've had messages literally like 6 months later. I'm like, oh, hey, hi, how you doing? Sorry.
Sorry, I didn't get back to you.
Yeah. That's the best places to find me.
Yeah. So no, yeah, the Nigerian prince seems to get through sometimes.
Yeah.
I get friend requests and messages from people who are like, I don't know. that should have gone to the spam folder.
Well, and the crazy thing, being a divorced dad's coach, I get all kinds of spam from single ladies, and it's all bots or whatever. But yeah, it's so crazy. So yeah, friend me. Follow me, whatever, so that way I can make sure it comes into my actual inbox and I'll see it and I'll respond back to you.
Okay. Well, that's good. Well, thank you again, James. I appreciate having you on. And this will be up on the podcast in a few weeks. So awesome. We'll get that as well. So
yeah, no. Thank you, man. It's been awesome talking to you tonight.
And good luck. And so let me know if you do sign up for that 50K.
Absolutely.
That's always there's always that kind of temptation. Can I do more?
It's getting back in the habits. Cause I mean, running, you know, you love running, but if you don't have a race, we all know you kind of get in that funk. Cause like, mm-hmm. I need something to be aiming for. So that's kind of in the back, you know, again, that the 50 and when I'm 50 and give me something to motivate me and we'll see.
Yeah. We all train better if we have a race to go to. It's this year. And I know a lot of runners have struggled because they says, well, my races are all canceled.
Yeah.
And, you know, where's my motivation to run? And,
yeah.
And so, yeah, that's been a big issue for a lot of us, I know. So yeah, hopefully next season. So, and you know, I've got races coming up too. So I find it easier to train if there's a race coming up. So,
absolutely.
Well, good luck.
If you do, man. It's that carrot.
Thanks again, James. Good talking to you. See you next time.
Take care, Eric.
Hey, thanks for listening to this episode of the Ultramarathon Mindset Trail Talk. If you enjoyed this episode, please consider giving us a 5-star rating and review. And don't forget to subscribe. That way you won't miss out on any new episodes. If you'd like to contact me, you can find me on Facebook as @UltramarathonMindset. Or you can find me on the web at theultramarathonmindset.com. Remember, your mindset is the key to success in running and in life, and developing a strong mindset is a skill you can improve. Hey, thanks again for listening. I'll see you next time.